How's it going, bud?
Wasn't expecting you to be out there today.
Office a couple minutes ago, got on the freeway, headed home. I am on vacation tomorrow, and I decided to blow off a little early today. How are you doing?
I just sat here trying to finish up the route today.
What do you have today?
I left today. It's been a pretty quick day for some reason, but I think I got maybe five left.
Not too bad at all. I just got done. I teach a class every week at work for basic electronics to new engineers. Just finished that a few minutes ago and decided, you know what, I don't have any more meetings today, so I'm just going to go ahead and head home.
Good. I'm glad you're going to go home early, but kind of surprised you're having to teach a basic electronics class to engineers.
It's analog electronics, which a lot of universities don't really cover anymore. So unless you're doing an analog specialty in one of the engineering programs, you don't get a lot of the nuance for a lot of the analog side of things. So I just do sort of I call it basic. It would probably be a lot more than basic to most people. But for a new engineering student who just graduated, you know, it's a good refresher course, and I start to deal with a lot of the nuance and subtleties and non-idealities in a lot of these analog concepts.
What you're saying now, when you said basic, I was thinking about my basic electronics class, and I was like, wow, that's having to go back pretty good ways.
Start there, you know, this is what you learn in school, and then I go to this is how it really is.
And it's always to have a good refresher, especially if you don't use it for a while, and then you got to go do it. You're going to need a refresher. At least I know I will.
At this force, it's in T-Mobile. And the deal for those engineers is make them be a technician for a year. That'll teach them.
A technician right now who has been a technician for years, and I'm actually training him up to become an engineer.
He knows what the real world is like then. There's not to design things not to be worked on. It's in 4CTC. Now let's all continue around.
Down and chat with us, but the technicians have seen a lot of real things, and the engineers that get out of school, you know, they've done some stuff in the labs. You know, most accredited engineering programs do some lab work, but not like, not all the time. So, it's definitely good to get some hands-on experience for sure.
Handy to have that.
Analog transmitters on AM, oddly enough, for a living. And, the engineers that built the stuff, not a clue how to work on it.
They know how it works.
But they just don't know how to work on it.
We actually, that's a big problem that we deal with. With our manufacturing partners, we actually have a process called Design for Manufacturability. And, they give us feedback on our designs early on to make sure that it's something that they can build and they can rework and they can work on it if they have to. You know, granted, it's just a power tool, and a lot of the times, it's a very simple, we're just going to replace this mechanism or whatever, but, it still has to be serviceable. Like, if we have a bad run or something, rework is important to be able to get those things out. So, I hear what you're saying for sure.
Pop out. No, I'm still here. I was dealing with traffic. Sorry about that. Go ahead.
Five cops all going very slowly and looked like they were looking. So I'll be on the side for just a moment.
I have a question for you because I heard you mention it the other day when I was in the black hole, but I couldn't get back to you. That you had built a 12-volt conversion for the 20-volt batteries or 40-volt batteries that y'all offer. When are they going to put that into production?
Something that I did on the side, it will never go into production, I don't think. I don't think they see enough demand to really roll off, 100,000 of them or something like that. But, it's something I can certainly look into. All I did really was just take some plastics from a charger and gut the electronics and put in one of those Amazon DC to DC converters just so I can run my ham radio stuff. But yeah, it would be awesome if we had a a 12 volt converter. I think we do have an 800 watt inverter that'll run off the 18 volt battery, but I don't know if it's got a 12 volt output, and if it does, I don't know what the current limit is.
For HKX. Well, I have lots of those red batteries around that I'd love to be able to use those for ham radio stuff.
TTI, which is the company that makes Ryobi, we're down on exit 27, but we have like a 20 volt and a 40 volt battery line that, I've got these little homemade DC to DC converters that I cooked up so I can run my ham radio stuff off of our batteries.
Oh, okay. Well, I have DeWalt tools. Sorry. But yeah, I would love to be able to do that off of their 20 volt battery stuff. Run a bunch of ham stuff off of that. That'd be great.
You don't need to apologize. You know, we need DeWalt out there to make us look good. Hi, hi.
Eric, but I was looking at something to do with the red batteries, Milwaukee's, that way, because I've got a ton of those things laying around.
Make something that works with all the battery packs and all converters on the 12 volt. That'd be great.
Amazon, and people make these 3D printed battery interfaces for most tool batteries that'll give you just a flying set of wires, like, you know, number 10 gauge or number 12 or something like that. They're usually about $20 for a battery topper.
Seen those, but we're stepping the voltage down. I was looking for that, and I haven't found it yet.
Amazon, it's a company or a brand called UXCell, UXCELL. They make all kinds of DC to DC converters to step down various voltages, and they make one that's good from like 36 to 60 volts down to 13.8 at 30 amps, which is great for ham radio stuff.
Can't find that then. That's what I've been looking for. Like I said, I've got lots of these Milwaukee batteries laying around that would make great power supplies for ham radio.
I have to look there too when I get stopped.
Yourself, I mean, it's easy enough. I mean, it sucks to throw away an expensive charger, but usually if you can just get the charger and gut the electronics out of it, you know, you'll have access to the battery interface and socket, and then you can run the wires to, your DC to DC converter. It's easy to do. It's just expensive to buy a charger and throw it away like that.
What I do for a living, right? I get deals where they give me the chargers and extra batteries, extra tools. I mean, I get stuff like that. I got like 10 chargers laying at the house.
That I can tear apart my old 18-volt DeWalt. I can't tear apart the new ones yet.
You need something that's got the socket on it, and then you can do whatever you want with the wires on the backside.
I got one of the chargers and then just using it for the dropping the battery on, because it's got the 12-volt battery and the 18-volt battery over there.
I'm all sorts of trouble doing that.
You know, connected together inside, in case you ever plugged in both batteries, you'd have a couple of batteries connected together with different voltages, and that would end all kinds of bad.
I'm out.
You could run like two radios. You could have one just for monitoring something or peeking out an APRS on low voltage where it didn't require a lot on the 12-volt side, and use the 18-volt or 20-volt for the other stuff, all in one package.
Another thing we have is an inverter that you put some of our 40-volt batteries into, and it gives you 120 volts AC at like 1,500 or 1,800 watts or something. So if you got that much equipment, you could probably just run a 12-volt power supply off of your AC inverter. I mean, you have a conversion loss that way, but it's a little bit simpler to set up because you already have all the stuff.
60% efficiency loss, AC-DC, AC-DC. I mean, you know, it's just fun stuff.
Not either. So I think the inverter's like 90%, and the DC-DC is, you know, AC-DC is like 90%. It's like 80% overall. It's not terrible.
Nation, I was meaning to ask you about that this morning, but just didn't get the opportunity.
Somebody did actually bring up papers. have a question. Since any of y'all have an idea of a decent radio that is actually obtainable, then I can get computer control for APERS.
Like an APERS display in your mobile rig?
You want to go up onto a solar system that's going to be 100% off-grid, and so I'm going to be sending telemetry back into the system. But I do want the option that if I, you know, somebody's up at the cabin and they need a 911, they can get something back. So it'll be running off of like a Raspberry Pi.
The FT, I believe it's the FT300 or 400, either one will do that.
What was it? I think it's the FTM300 or something like that, but it was receive only. No capability of sending from the computer out.
You're fine. You don't need a APERS TNC or anything.
What do you mean that?
You can just get the sound modem package, and you can do all of the APERS coding and decoding in the Raspberry Pi and only use the radio as the transmitter and receiver for it. You just need a straight-up radio for that.
Box to trigger the transmit.
Now with some left-lane camper. 85 going 15 under the speed limit and holding up a whole bunch of people, making them mad. So with a Raspberry Pi, the Raspberry Pi can handle all of the digital stuff as well as the modem side. So basically you would just need an audio device to plug into a USB port on the Pi to act as the microphone and speakers of the Raspberry Pi. And then, the Raspberry Pi will generate the AFSK for the packets. And just they would get transmitted via audio through the FM radio.
But, getting Vox to work as your push to talk was not the best of things.
Thanks for that. The Raspberry Pi has plenty of GPIOs that you can use, and in fact, the sound modem package can be configured to use a GPIO as the PTT switch, so you would just need to run that to the microphone port to the correct pin to act as a PTT switch from the software.
For CTD mobile.
Yeah, I just want to throw that out there as a suggestion if you want to look into it. By no means have to do it that way, but it's something that will alleviate you of the need to find an unobtainable radio right now.
I'm throwing my backup D710 up there, but that's really kind of overkill for what I need.
In both of my vehicles, and it is nice because it's completely self-contained, and you can use a digipeater, with no computer at all or anything. But it is a little overkill for a remote site.
KO4 ATX. I'm running the 710 and the tool truck and my personal truck also.
Rigs, that's what I'm talking on now, and I have one that, because I was running an iGate digipeater from my house, but that got taken down when I reworked my office, and somehow or another, I don't actually have access to the outside world from my office anymore. I forgot to put in an antenna three-plate or something.
I ran my digipeater off of an FT2900 and my Linux box, so I had a nice 75-watt transmitting digipeater just run from my Linux box there. It was a lot of fun.
For a good little while, right up until about a year ago, and then I reworked my house, did some remodeling, actually created an office instead of a corner, and there's no windows that lead out to my antennas. I have RF cables snaking across underneath doors trying to get outside.
Was it to set up the digipeater? I've got an extra 700 that I can use for my digipeter at the QTH.
Pretty easy, either from Linux or from Windows. I was running it off my Windows machine because it was available. And, a couple of try-fails, and then all of a sudden it started working. Worked great.
Windows, I've only ever done a digipeter with a Linux box, so.
understanding the Raspberry Pis are really hard to get right now.
That's odd. They just don't got them. Chip shortage, just like everybody else. I went looking for radios to find a nice, you know, you can't get the D710s at all.
About the last two, about a year ago that I could find.
Used, they want more than they cost when they were new.
Now what to do? Because, I mean, if they don't got I have a tiny tracker laying around somewhere, but I don't know. I haven't really actually looked to see how I could interface to it. But I'm almost, from where it's going to be sitting, it's almost line of sight to Mount Mitchell.
It's been good talking to you today. Eric, be safe on the end. I think it's Wyatt on the other end, if I remember correctly. I'm pulling into my next stop, so I'm going to say 7-3s now. And y'all be careful out there. KO4HKX, and I'll be clear.
Have a great rest of your day. We'll catch you a little bit later. W2JKT.
Yeah, 73s, and you are correct. It is Wyatt. KJ4CTZ Mobile.
You and I talked before a couple times. Did you used to be part of that early morning group with Dave and them a few years ago?
Not, because I hate early mornings, and I try to avoid rush hour like the plague.
My voice sounds familiar, and I remember the name Wyatt being thrown around. And, oh, hang on.
I've ceased to be quite as rare DX as I used to be, because I've been commuting back and forth to Clemson the last month or so. As a matter of fact, I'm on my way there now. And I'm going to see if I can't find the hole that I found the other day at 6 Mile. KJ4, CTD Mobile.
Sorry about that. 85 North decided to stop abruptly for a moment. But, I just moved away from Seneca, the next little town over from Clemson. I lived there for almost 10 years, but decided to hightail it. Now I live up in North Carolina. But, nice area down there. What has you commuting to Clemson?
Renovations on some an apartment building we bought, because you know electronics are only good for so far.
Yeah, everything is growing in leaps and bounds around that whole area. So it's real estate's kind of a good thing to be in down there right now, especially with the growth of campus and them trying to double the amount of students they have.
We're chomping at the bit to get into the two apartments we're renovating right now, and we're actually only going to have one of them available when we get done, because we're going to rotate to the next one.
I just sold my house in Seneca, and I had a bunch of people wanting to buy it who wanted to just turn around and rent out the bedrooms to college kids, and I didn't take any of those offers because, that's not really what the neighborhood is for there, but I ended up selling it to a pastor from a church over in Westminster, but real estate's hot down there near the college right now.
Renovation, we've run into the same problems that we have on the electronics side. Everything is in short supply. Can't get it. We waited, I think it was 15 weeks to get windows and doors, exterior windows and doors, to come in. And, that was a really long time. We expected, 4 weeks or something.
Easy, I know what you're talking about. I did some renovations on my house before I sold it, and it just took a long time to get stuff. Like the flooring I wanted, I think I had to wait 6 weeks for that. It took me a couple of months just to get a deck built because of all the lumber things last year. So, yeah, it's definitely crazy. And, even now with my new house up in North Carolina, it has a swimming pool, and I had to buy a whole bunch of swimming pool chemicals to get it, in the right chemistry. But, some of the chemicals I had to wait a couple of weeks for because they're in such short supply.
Something that's not, massive long wait is granite countertops. We ordered one that's what I'm going to go survey today, is they're actually installing it today. We only ordered it about a week and a half ago, and it was supposed to be delivered on Monday, but they miscut a hole and had to send it back to fabrication and then cut it again, and they're already done with it.
Yes, but I wonder why that's so so much different than the rest of the industry, because, man, everything else is just forget it.
The granite in stock, and all they had to do was run it through fabrication, which they do locally.
That's actually sourced here, like the granite is not so bad, but it's pretty messy with some of the other things.
surprising is doors, or even windows for that matter. I mean, why in the world it would take 15 weeks to build a door that standard size? I do not understand that.
It just totally baffles the mind, doesn't it?
It's just like, it's a piece of wood that you cut some holes in. I mean, it can't possibly be that difficult.
But it's just they can't find anybody to cut the hole.
Maybe still left over from the timber issue we had last year. And they're still, maybe they're still catching up from that. I don't know.
To hire a bunch of people right now, it's hard to do. So, you know, there could be labor shortages too. You just never know.
Labor shortage problem. We ended up having to install the doors and windows ourselves because we couldn't get anybody to actually even call us back, much less show up to do it.
Exact same problem down in Seneca. You know, it took me 2 years to get a guy to come build my new deck, and he had to come down from North Carolina to do it. So, you know, that's pretty nuts when you just have to go, you know. I think part of the problem in that area is that all the contractors want to go out and work on the lake houses because there's so much more money out there. So if you just have an apartment or a modest house or something with a small job, they don't want to take the time to do it because they can make so much more money working on these big, big houses out on the lake.
Some of the ratty-looking houses out on the lake are freaking expensive. KJ4, CCD Mobile.
JKT Mobile. Yeah, I think I might miss living in that area, but yeah, just not being able to get anything done, you know, it gets old really fast.
And you live in North Carolina, but you're on 85. Where do you live in North Carolina?
A little town called Shelby, where they have that big ham fest every year.
Commute that far, off from there to Anderson every day?
A couple days a week, so it's not that bad. And I'm looking for an electric vehicle right now because we have a free charger at work, and the city of Shelby also has free charging, so I can pull a fast one here and never have to pay any gas for commuting or for electricity. So it's kind of a good deal.
Well, I know where Shelby is. I get on. I live up closer to Landrum, up in that general direction, and I get on 74 and go that way to get to Charlotte because 85 is stupid.
I shifted my working hours, so I leave Shelby around 5 o'clock in the morning, and I get to the office around 6:15, and then I leave the office sometime between 2 and 3. Today I left at 2 because I'm on vacation tomorrow anyway, and decided to leave a little early. But usually I leave around 3 o'clock, and I get home around 4:15, 4:30, and it's not too bad. And like I said, I only go in a couple days a week, so you know, the rest of the time I'm working at home. Repeater anymore. Don't know if you're in a hole or what, but this is W2JKT. Try again. Table Rock, probably in a hole. So we'll catch up with you later, Y73. I'll be monitoring here for a while, so feel free to jump back in if you can get the repeater again. This is W2JKT listening.
JKT and 0TR. This is Tom, and I forget your name, but I've talked to you before.
Here's Eric. I remember talking to you last week, I think.
Yeah, Eric. I want to tell you how lucky you was. This morning, coming from the north, they had a 10-car pileup on I-85.
Good.
Say around 8 o'clock, wasn't it, Bernice? They're somewhere in that area. Between 7 and 8 o'clock, I would guess, Eric.
And was it north or south?
Which way? Between exit 66 and 70, wherever that's at. I don't know how Bernice remembers that, but she got a better memory than I got.
I just passed 67, and I just passed some debris over here on the left side, so maybe it was there.
Yes, there was 10 cars involved in it, and it was stopped. It took them quite a while clear. The only reason I know is we watched the Fox News channel there on WYFF4 of a morning. And for a while, they wouldn't even let the DOT cameras show it. When they tried to bring it up, they'd shut it off, and then later on they brought it up. But it was a mess.
You know, an 85 being a mess somewhere, in the, you know, any time of day, it's just, you know, I know I'm taking a gamble with this commute, because, you know, at any time, 85 could just turn into a dumpster fire.
We had a good time. There's no doubt about that. And, I heard you say he's talking about electric car. I just can't go that route yet, but I can see where you would. They're just one of Tesla going south here, one of the small ones. But, I saw a picture on Fox News the other day, and this couple was going on their honeymoon, and I think it was, and their car went dead, and it was in West Virginia, and there was a few miles from the coal mine, and the coal miners, who everybody hates anymore, all the Democrats hate. The guy stopped, and he went up to the coal mine, come back, and they actually got 8 or 10 guys, and they pushed that car the rest of the way to the coal mine and recharged it for him there. That'd be a little humiliating.
This thing is definitely something that we'll be grappling with for a little while, but the one I'm looking at, it's good for 250 miles on a charge, and I go about 80 miles each way, and I get free charging at work, so and they keep the chargers working. So I'm not too worried about running out on my commute, but I can definitely see where you can find yourself in a bad way if you don't plan your trip well.
One of the heads of our Greer Club down here, K4SV, he drove his to California and back before. That's just a burglar alarm. The radar detector went off.
Yeah, especially with Teslas, you know, they have all those high-speed superchargers everywhere, and they're pretty well supported. The level 2 charging isn't really fast enough to do a road trip with. You have to do some kind of DC fast chargers, and those are much more, fewer and far between. Level 2 chargers are everywhere, but, you know, for a level 2 charger, you need to be parked for a few hours to get any good charge out of them.
The good ones at home, and I don't know anything about the levels of them, they are, a rooster just crowed, and I got the window open here. They are exceedingly expensive. I don't know if they have to run 3-phase to your house, or if you can do it on 240-volt single-phase, but otherwise, I think they take about 11 or 12 hours to charge one, don't they?
When you get for your home, what they do is they come and wire in another dryer socket. That's a standard 50-amp, you know, 4-prong, 240-volt connector. And you can charge at 48 amps, 240 volts, which is just shy of 12 kilowatts. And for the car I'm looking at, that would charge it in about 8 hours. And that's the level 2 charger that I'm talking about. You know, you just have to be plugged in for a few hours. The DC fast chargers, you could never get one at home because you know, it would take, your entire 200 amp service to run one. And that's even just for a small DC fast charger. So the DC fast chargers do require generally like a 3-phase, 200 amp, either, 240, 345, or, maybe even a 480 volt service.
Roger. I can deal with that. I dealt with 480 and 240 3-phase all my life for about 50 years. But you said a dryer plug, and I don't mean to be picky, Eric, but a dryer plug's only 30 amps. You meant a range plug, and they're a 50-amp plug. But anyways, thanks for that information. I just was curious. And I got a, let me see, it's a range plug in my carport. When I first moved here, I wanted to have one for the welder, and I don't use it anymore. And I put it in for the portable generator, but I have a Generac now, so I don't use it. But if I'm ever forced to that, and I'm pretty old, so at 74, I doubt if I ever buy one of those things. The ones that my friend Dave bought were $100,000 cars, and that's just a little out of our pay grade, but I guess they're making them about $35,000 now, aren't they?
What I'm looking at is the Chevy Bolt, the little SUV they make, and that's about 35. And, yeah, fine business on the socket. I just had that wrong. And, yeah, it is a 50 amp. It looks, it's the same thing as the RV. You know, I have a travel trailer, so it's basically the same thing as a 50 amp RV socket that they put in for the level 2 charging at home.
A 4-wire. All right. Yeah, well, I'm old school, too. I was thinking of the Crowfoot, you know, 50 amp one. Well, we've arrived at home, Eric. Enjoyed talking to you. And hope you have good luck with that. Those volts were, they flopped when they first come out. So I don't know if they've improved them or not. They said there's going to increase the range on them, but those first ones, dead bird, they didn't do very good. So be careful with your shekels out there and spend them wisely. Take care, Eric. This is N0TR. Be clear with your final.
Good talking to you again as well. I hope you have a great rest of your day. Best 73s to you, and we'll talk to you again a little bit down the log. This is W2JKT listening.
W2JKT, W4DJW. You still there, Eric?
Long time no speak.
Going good. I heard you talking to Wyatt about the assembling your AFSK packets on a Raspberry Pi. Did you use Dire Wolf to do that?
Something called an APRX, which is basically a command line only, no user interface, essentially a PNC for what it's worth. It just runs in the background.
Okay. Well, I wondered if there was more than one way to do it. I assembled them, just the text string that is the APRS beacon or APRS message, whatever you want it to be. You can assemble any APRS transmission with text, and then if you install Direwolf, you cat the text and pipe it into its encoder, and then you pipe the output of the encoder into the input of narrowband Pi transmitter, which vibrates pin number that you of your choice. I chose pin number 4, and then you pipe that through a narrowband filter or a deep notch filter so that you don't, you know, get, you know, emissions out into the band, ripples out into the band. And then it'll transmit your, you don't even need a transmitter to transmit APRS packets on a Raspberry Pi. It's got everything. And then with an RTL SDR, you can receive. So you don't even need a radio with a Raspberry Pi. You get a RTL dongle and, you know, the install Direwolf, and that's all you need to do APRS on a Raspberry Pi.
Yeah, APRX will generate the packets, you know, the digital piece, and then it'll output that to either, if you get the sound modem package, the sound modem package will generate the AFSK, which then comes out of the sound card, or you could probably, you know, pipe that over to something else, you know, to some kind of transmitter like you're talking about.
And I don't know how much you've been digging into WAV files, but they're not very complicated. They got a header on them. They're the IQ, the in phase and quadrature, and each one of the samples is just a number. It's a numeric value between negative 127 and positive 127. That's all that is. So to generate the I and Q is super simple. I mean, so you can write a C program that does that for you in like 2 minutes. But anyway, I thought that was interesting. I was curious if you did it the same. I didn't know you were doing the same thing I was doing, probably about the same time I was doing it.
Yeah, in Seneca, I probably took down my Digipeater, you know, maybe a couple of years ago. Never, you know, when I renovated my home office, I never really put it back up because it didn't really have great coverage anyway. But, I messed with it a lot back then. I just haven't really had time to do a whole lot of radio stuff lately.
So you landed a job with a tool manufacturer? Is that engineering and a tool manufacturer?
Yeah, the Ryobi company, you know, the TTI is the parent company, but it's a big Ryobi office. They're off of Exit 27. I manage a group of electrical engineers that does motor controllers.
Man, you got lucky. That's a good job to have. I bet you're enjoying every minute of it, huh?
Probably the most fun job I've ever had, and, you know, the perks are nice. I get a lot of free power tools.
Every company has its fringe benefits. That's cool. But engineering and power tools all wrapped up in one, and they pay you to do it. What more can you ask for? Well, that would be nice. That'd be a nice to have, but not a necessity.
Yeah, no, it's a great job. I like it a lot, and like you said, the fringe benefits are really nice. So, I get a lot of free tools, but I also get to buy stuff super cheap if I can't get it for free. So, it works out on either end.
Well, that's good. And you're driving an all-electric car now?
Well, driving my big diesel truck right now, but it costs about $50 a day to drive down. Luckily, I only go in the office a couple days a week, but it's expensive to drive into the office. I don't know how much you overheard, but I recently moved up to Shelby, so my commute got a lot longer, and I'm looking for an EV right now just to take the cost out of that.
Okay, yeah, $50 a day, that's a lot. That truck burns up. When I was going to Charlotte every day back during the last peak of the fuel, it was $70 every other day. $50 a day, that's, you're paying even more to go from Shelby to Anderson than I was paying to go from Greenville to Charlotte every day.
Dave?
Today marks my one-year anniversary of not working, and then next month I'll retire. So I just, like, coasted for a year, and then I'm going to be retired next month.
Those folks, he's joining us retarded. I mean retired people. WU2T said that.
But I can't remember your name.
Romeo Uniform, Sierra Tango Yankee. I'm over here in the Spartanburg area. Yeah, I heard y'all talking, and I think I talked to you once before. It's been a while. But I had to throw that in there, Dave, at you.
Eric, just think of those old crusty nuts and bolts that are turned, that you turn with those power tools. Think about what they are. They're rusty. And that'll remind you of WU2T's name.
Nothing came to mind when I heard the call, but I just wasn't 100% sure about it.
Yes, Eric, the way a lot of people remember me is they have trouble with my call, so they have trouble remembering the Whiskey Uniform 2 Tango, and it's a tongue twister when you're trying to say it. But somebody else come up with they say I'm wound up too tight.
That one's a lot easier.
Yeah, he does get kind of wound up when he's selling that, and it is kind of hard to follow him.
Go ahead, Dave.
I doubled with you, Rusty. Go again.
I was just saying that my call is a tongue twister, but it sure is wonderful on CW.
I was looking back through my log, Rusty, and I came across your call sign before your call sign before this call sign. and it was next to Ruth's call sign. It's back in 2005. This is your third call sign you've had since I've known you.
This is my fourth one, Dave.
Since 2005? I think your first one might go back before that.
Well, yeah, the first one goes back before that. The first one was KD4IKO. And then after I upgraded to General, I got the Whiskey 4 India Kilo Oscar. And then I tried the AJ4RK for a while, which was all right, but wasn't much. It was really difficult on CW. And then I found this good call, and I'm going to stick with it for now.
And that wasn't AK4HR. AK4, it was AJ4, right?
For Juliet 4, Romeo Kilo, yep.
Okay. Well, anyway, where were we, Eric? So during that year, I've been doing a lot of exploring with amateur radio direction finding. You ever done any of that?
Do tell. I will comment first, though. My very first call sign, I got my novice ticket back in 1987, and I only had CW privileges except for that little voice sliver on 10 meters, but I had no 10 meters antenna. So I was all CW, and my call was Kilo Bravo to Charlie Victor Hotel, which was a fistful on a straight key. It was just an absolute nightmare. So I was very happy to upgrade a technician and get a shorter call.
Okay, and right station recognized. Yeah, I'll tell you what, Eric. I have never been able to do a straight key. You don't want to try to copy me on a straight key. I do fair on a paddle, and I do pretty good on that. You know, it's got the pair of paddles. So my speed is still slow on that, but I'm getting better as I work at it. And I'm getting better reading it by ear. So, but I send do my sending with a keyboard. That way, people don't have trouble deciphering what I'm sending. Go ahead to the other station.
There were two two other stations in there. Wyatt was one, and then Wyatt, there's another one. Go ahead, pick it up, Wyatt, and give it to the other one.
Just doing a radio check because there's a hole, and I don't know if I'm still in the hole.
You're not. You're out of the hole. Pass it to the other one.
Hey, Eric. Either one.
Maybe he gave up because there was a little bit of a train wreck there. But anyway, Eric, the and yeah, Rusty, straight keys are hard. I was going to do straight key only because my dad did straight key only. I was going to do straight key only until Jim Milton, KI4MSA, dropped his paddles off over here, and that spoiled me for life. I can't go back to a straight key. It's too hard. Too hard to get the spacing right. Anyway, Eric, the ARDF, there's a couple of different ways. I'm going with the way that is TDOA, time difference of arrival, where a nanosecond is 1 foot. For every nanosecond that goes by, your electromagnetic wave travels a foot. That's the one that's the most fun.
Yeah, the network of lightning detectors works. I looked into getting one of those lightning detectors for lightningmaps.org. You can't really get it right now, but I think that's how they work on time difference of arrival.
Okay, so you're familiar with that. That's the way. There's some guy in Germany that did that with bats coming out of a cave, and it worked pretty good. So I tried that. I built my first couple, well, four of them, actually, and figured out how to get the start time, because that's kind of really hard to get it down to, like, less than a microsecond, down to more like a nanosecond. And once I got all that working out, and I got that figured out and got it to be consistent, then I asked the colonel, what time is it? And the kernel varies between 200,000 microseconds and 1,400,000 microseconds. A millisecond and a half. It can take up to a millisecond and a half to get a timestamp from the kernel, and that's too variable. Got to get some hardware that gets a time stamp back to me when I ask for it, right, down to the nanosecond, not, 14,000 microseconds later.
Because I've arrived at home. Catch you all later. W2T clear.
It's difficult to use anything running an operating system to do time-critical things just because it takes so long for the operating system itself to do anything. You do almost have to have some kind of phase-correlated hardware to maintain your coherence between different devices to maintain sub-nanosecond time correlations.
So that's what I started looking for. That's where I am now. There's this company south of Ukraine, about 200 miles south of Ukraine, that builds this thing called a click, a TDC click. And it's got two SMA connectors into it. And you send it a pulse on one click, and it starts a clock that's accurate down to the picosecond. And then you send a pulse to the other SMA connector, and it stops it, and it gives you back a timestamp for or how many nanoseconds or pico, whatever you decide that have passed since you sent the start. And the start is tied to the atomic clock through the GPS with a PPS pin on it. Does that make sense?
Yep.
So that's what I'm waiting on now is the hardware and understanding how to communicate with it, because it's not like a UART RS-232. It's more like a I2C or a SPI. I've got to learn how to communicate with the thing.
You can probably even just get library somewhere that does that.
Yeah, they've got one, but I want to be able to debug it, so I don't want their library. I want to know how to do it myself. And I do have some code that does that for like a pressure sensor, and it's the code. It doesn't link with any library, and so I can see how you do that. But you got a lot of bit shifting going on in that code. It's not real easy to understand.
DI, many, many years ago when I was at Honeywell, I was talking to an Ethernet switch IC, and it was configured over SPI. So, I wrote my own SPI because I was using an 8051 with very limited resources due to cost constraints, and so I had to bit-bang my own SPI. So that was pretty fun, but it was not hard. I mean, it's not something that you're going to spend, a week of your life on. It's going to be more like an afternoon.
Well, that's encouraging. Because I haven't done that before. I've done lots of RS-232, and that's pretty simple once you get used to it. But the two wires or the one wire or the SPI, I think, is just two channels, and I squared C is like you can have like 20 or something, right?
I squared C is a common bus, and then every device on the bus has its own address, and so it's an device addressable, you know, two-wire bus. You got a clock and a data line. SPI has, you know, two data lines that can be shared, but then there's a slave select that's one GPIO line per slave device, and then there's a common clock. So you can have common clock and data on SPI, but you need a separate slave select for each of your devices. So if you're going to have a whole string of a bunch of devices, it's better to use I2C.
Yeah, well, for this, as far as I can tell, all I need is one. I just need to know what time is it. And the way I figure I'm going to do that is let the atomic clock start it. And then when I see the emission coming up through the ground, the noise floor, at some point, you have to make an executive decision and say, that's a signal. And then you call it. And as long as you're consistent from what I did, the way I found out I was off is I took a Raspberry Pi Zero and I put it between two 4Bs. And I tied its GPIO 16 to each of the 4Bs GPIO pin 18. And I said, now when I raise this guy high on this Pi Zero W, I want you guys to both tell me what time it is. And each of them told me what time it was, and then I graphed all that, did several thousand of them at various speeds, and found out that's just too sloppy.
Yeah, fish is an easy solution for that reason, too. That the easier solutions are always going to be, you know, a little sloppy like that.
Yeah, so now I have to wait for more hardware to come in. But anyway, it's worth it. It's been a lot of fun. Once I get this one knocked out, I figure I'll be able to get a lawnmower, a robotic lawnmower that cuts the grass and is accurate within about 3 or 4 inches of everywhere it's cutting grass.
Kind of like a Roomba for your lawn.
Except it follows like a toolpath, right? Instead of like the ones that you get out there, they bump into something, they turn at some random angle, and they proceed across the lawn at that angle, and they bump into something. Or there's a wire in the ground but it's random patterns. This would be more like when you see a CNC machine to, you know, clean out a pocket with islands.
I have a big gantry around the edges of the yard that just has a cutting on it. That sounds pretty cool. I just bought a house I just bought off the shelf. It has a swimming pool in the back, and I bought myself one of those robotic cleaners. And it's pretty much the same thing as the Roomba. It kind of like wanders up until it gets to where it can't go anymore, and then it goes off in another direction. But it does have an inertial reference on it, so it can avoid like double backing on itself. And it only takes about 2 hours to cover the entire pool, so that's pretty cool.
Oh, yeah, that's pretty good. And you don't leave lines in a pool, right?
Ben, when it's working, but when it's done, you know, there might be a few little things here and there, but yeah, you can tell it's cleaned the whole thing.
That's pretty cool. Anyway, that's what I plan on putting. Once I learn how this works, I'm going to put it to use on something like that. And then I'll go from a ground vehicle to a water vehicle to an air vehicle.
Plane is a thing, you know.
Yeah, I already have one of those, but it uses a Pixel Hawk. Have you heard of the Pixel Hawk?
Curious what kind of bird you have.
Well, I just took an old Tiger stick. It's just a stick plane. I don't know if you're familiar with radio control airplanes, but there's ultra sticks, big sticks, little sticks, micro sticks. I just took a Tiger stick, which is, it's a plank. It's just got a flat wing, full symmetrical flat wing and a square box for a fuselage, right, with a plank tail. And I put a Ardu pilot on a Pixhawk. And programmed it to fly a pattern out at the airfield and take off, and you flip it into auto mode, and it takes off and goes over and merges in with that pattern and flies that pattern until you take it out. Eric, good talking to you. Take care. Good to hear you on the radio again after such a long time. W2JKT, W4DJW Clear.
WK4WWA.
Hey, Steve.
Hey, Megan, did you pull the trigger?
No, not yet. But that that conversation with Eric makes it a lot easier too.
It sounds like everything is all together except for the accuracy on the time and those guys in south of Ukraine. I'm hoping that's going to come together. So anyhow, all right. Well, I'm going down to meet Patrick in a few minutes. I'm going to let him try out a West Mountain DSP.
Okay, well, I thought about 9 o'clock this morning. I was still listening on the input from your house, and I switched it to, no, I was listening on the output, and I switched it to the input at 9 o'clock, and now I got, and the first samples I heard were you talking to Patrick this morning, and now I've got samples. I think it went from 9 o'clock to 2 o'clock and didn't hear anything.
Okay, well, I was on my 2-meter base in the building. Did that create any issue at all?
You didn't break it. I mean, I could hear you. I pulled the samples across, and I, you know, they've got the nanosecond timestamp on them, and I piped them into SOX and turned them into WAV files and then piped that out to my speakers, and I could hear it was you. I could hear you plain as day. But I couldn't hear you, who you were talking to. And I just looked a few minutes ago, and I see I've got more samples that start about 2 o'clock. So I'm going to find out what that is next. But switching it from the output to the input is what made that difference, because now I'm hearing what you can hear on reverse.
Good. That's good. Okay. Well, hopefully. Now, did you hear the problem on the repeater this morning?
Yeah, I hear that a lot. But 15 minutes later, it's gone. So I don't say anything. I just listen. And it shall pass. It always does.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yep. So anyhow, I think they were thinking it was partly their equipment, so I jumped in and said, no, guys, listen to me. And I'm clear sight to the repeater, and we all figured out it wasn't our equipment.
Yeah, I think there's times that there's a lot of static up there, or there's a lot of wind up there, and there's not wind down here. There's something we don't know about, right, going on up there. A lot of wind over surfaces. But, you know, you warm it up 15 minutes after you warm it up, it's good to go. Hopefully that, whatever that is, I think we're talking about strengthening the ties for the feed line, and I think that might help. I don't know if it will or not, but it's not anything critical. It is annoying for the first 15 minutes, but then once you get past that, it's good. And you didn't break it when you were talking right underneath of it, right? I don't know how much power output you had, but it didn't break anything.
I remember, that was down at my building, not off of the tower.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that. It was loud and clear, though. I can tell you that. When it came through the speakers on my computer, it was undisputable. It was you.
Special. I got a big mouth. and I admit it too. I tell you what, would you like to do a little experiment around 8 o'clock this evening?
You mean like talking up underneath of it or something like that?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I have specifically not transmitted from my tower antenna until we could kind of, you know, do that little experiment, see just what the effect is.
Well, I don't think you're going to hurt it, and I'll be able to, I mean, anytime you use it, I'll be able to hear. You know, it'll make records of it anytime you use it. I can go back in time. If it, like, quits working altogether, I can go back and find what was the last thing it heard.
Well, I was just concerned maybe that much energy. I know it's in the null, but we don't actually know for sure what it's going to do. I mean, that much energy, I'm running 65 watt on that particular antenna, and if it did overpower it, it would probably cause it to reset, wouldn't it?
No, there's no reset on it. There's no, there's nothing like a reset. If you break it, it's broken. if you overpower it, it's broken. But I don't think that's going to happen. Because I transmit with 50 watts from right where I am right now, and there's four of those in here, right? Well, there's, you know, I've got them in other rooms in the house, and that one's been here, and I can transmit with 50 watts, you know, over and over and over again on a 17-foot collinear that's only 20 foot away, and it doesn't hurt anything.
That's what I like to hear. Okay. Well, sir, just to make me feel pretty good about the situation, along about 8 o'clock tonight, you wanna observe it, and I'll try to bring somebody up?
Yeah, if I'm here, I should be here. I am normally most of the time around that time, unless something, you know, unless Amy's, like, got my ear and won't let go, then, yeah, I can do that.